We live in troubled times. Human relationships, the human dimension, human affairs are always complicated, but certain times become immensely more tangled, more twisted, more toxic. We're in one of those times. When the White House engages in deception over and over again about contacts with Russia, in the midst of a resurgence of authoritarian regimes, that is troubling. When Congress promises to create a new healthcare system that'll be cheaper and better for everybody, and then comes up with a plan that will devastate millions upon millions of people and give millions of dollars to a few wealthy, that too is troubling. And when the EPA decides to roll back environmental regulations, environmental standards, exposing us all to who knows what, and calls that freedom, that's troubling. I could go on and on, I'm sure as you can. And we can rant and rave, we can ignore and excuse, we can complain or just grow cynical about the whole human project. Or we can seek something deeper. This shining thread that weaves its way through the tangled web of human relationships, human affairs, this thread. This is what our lessons are calling us to do, inviting us to do. Can we hear the call? Can we follow that path to Zion? Well, let's see where it goes. The place to begin is to be honest about the mess. The scriptures are clear about that again and again and again. In the book of Genesis, chapter 25, the author does not mince words. Isaac and Rebekah are the chosen people. Rebekah's pregnant with the next generation of hope and promise. But even in the womb, these two twins are at each other's throats. Esau is born first. Jacob comes forth from the womb grasping his brother's foot, which is a symbol for the author of the conflict that will define their lives. And if you were listening carefully, they represent two nations, Israel and Edom, which will be in conflict for generations and generations and hundreds of years, all of it beginning in the womb of Rebekah. And the conflict begins with the fact that in this ancient world, the firstborn gets all the wealth of the family. But from the beginning, Jacob is determined to get his hands on that blessing. He wants it for himself. Isaac loves Esau because Esau is a hunter and in effect keeps bringing home the bacon. Rebekah loves Jacob because he's quiet and thoughtful. But it's not too long before Esau the hunter falls prey to Jacob the quiet, thoughtful one, who's not quiet and thoughtful because he's meditative and, you know, kind of Buddha-like or Christ-like. He's quiet and thoughtful like a master chess person, scheming and trying to figure out 8 moves ahead how his greed and exploitation of his brother and family is going to work so he wins and everybody else loses. He's that kind of quiet and thoughtful. But Rebekah loves him and Isaac loves the other one, Esau. What a mess. And so even before the end of our passage, if you keep going a little farther, it becomes clear Esau has been tricked out of his birthright, and he's enraged with his brother. They're at each other's throats again, and the story pretty much goes downhill from there. So why tell this story? Why in the world is this story even in the Bible? We don't need to hear about more dysfunctional families. We've got enough of them in the newspaper. Well, it's here because in spite of the mess, something holy and deep is at work nonetheless. beckoning these brothers again and again and again to something more, something deeper. And so woven through these chapters, both Jacob and Esau have encounters with the holy. They have moments of turning and repenting. They even have moments of reconciliation. All that happens even as all this other stuff keeps persisting. Tangles keep flaring. The generations proceed and it keeps going this way. It's this complex dance of these chosen ones who are living messes and yet being called again and again and again to let go. Let go of the divisions, let go of the greed, let go of the bitterness. And they do, and then they don't. And then they do, and then they don't. And that, in a nutshell, is the book of Genesis. But all along the way, each generation's invited to take up the thread, which is at the heart of the story. This love of God, which is present in human affairs, in spite of the mess. That's why this story is here. Now, when we turn to the parable of the sower, you might think we're on very different ground. But actually, this too begins with the mess of human life, at least on the surface. You begin hearing the story as the people, the first hearers of the story, would have heard it. And the story begins with this extravagant farmer who just tosses seed everywhere, just throws it out there. And most of it lands on hard ground and doesn't do much of anything. Which, what Jesus is kind of saying, life is hard. Life is tough. Most of you here in the audience are going to live a hard scrabble existence where nothing much ever grows. All the possibilities of life, all these seeds that come are going to fall on your hard ground and it's not going to do anything. And the crowd would have heard that and would have said, yeah, life is hard, life is tough, nothing grows, things just keep going wrong. This is a good description for what life is. And then Jesus goes on and says, except for the few, except for the rich, because they have well-tended soil. They have servants and slaves that kind of keep things dug up. And so when the seeds go there, they just go into abundance. And in the world of that ancient world, you know, everybody in the crowd would have been shaking their heads. Yeah, that's right, the few have everything. And the rest of us are just being ground to dust. You've got it, Jesus. And so on the surface, they hear this story that describes their lives, their world, and they're paying attention. Where's this going? What's Jesus going to do with this? And clearly there's something more, but that's where it takes a really different turn. Because Jesus is looking at this crowd, not trying to stir up hostility and anger and fury and rage at the system. Jesus is looking at the crowd with compassion, with tenderness. His voice to them is full of hope and possibility. He, in some mysterious way, is seeing each of them as important, as significant in this world, in spite of the hard ground and all the mess. And that catches some of them. He's looking at me. He sees me. What is he talking about? And the parable itself becomes like a seed that gets into some of these people. It digs their way into their heart because they begin to sense that Jesus is talking about something here, something more than just our complaining about life all the time. He's talking about something different, something deeper, some deeper meaning, some deeper reality that's here. And then for some of them, as I imagine it, they would have thought, well, is God this extravagant farmer? Is God the one who never gives up in the face of this mostly unresponsive, tough, tangled up humanity where the ground is mostly hard and nothing grows? Is God just persisting on spreading seed? Even though we are just full of greed and bitterness and hate, hard ground everywhere, and yet the farmer keeps sowing seed, why would the farmer keep doing that? And then if the seed gets deep enough into some of these souls, they might ask a question like, is that because each of us human beings, is each of us the whole field? Is each of us mostly hard and unyielding, like Jesus is describing? And yet there are these places in our field that are open, that have been tended and worked by something. There's good soil here and here and here, even though everywhere else, And if they went to that place of depth, that moment, then you might have, well, I have had encounters with the divine. I have had moments when I've turned and changed. I have had moments of reconciliation. I sort of know that thread of abundance. It's in here somewhere. I can't always find it, but it's here. Even in this tangled, troubled world. Is that what Jesus is talking about for them then and for us now? That thread? That seed, all those seeds, most of whom which we miss, but one or two or three land on good soil within each of us. And when they take root, then you're out of the world of who's rich and who's poor. You're into some other world. If they take root within us in this divine place, then that enables us, no matter how little we might have, to become instruments of peace. Instruments of new life, instruments of transformation in the world where we think it's only the people at the top who can change things. And yet Jesus is saying if these seeds go deep enough, we can change this whole world. Well, we live in troubled times. There's lots and lots of hard soil. There's lots of deception, there's lots of scheming, there's lots of greed, lots of exploitation. How are we going to respond? Are we just going to get lost in all those stories of tangle and trouble and try to join up and get our own grasping going or just be bitter about how much they get away with and just be lost in those stories on that hard ground? Or are we going to listen for something more, something deeper, seeking out that holy thread of God's love that's at work in human affairs, in human hearts, that tells us, sitting here this morning, we are the chosen ones. And even when we make idiotic choices like Isaac going for Esau and Rebekah going for Jacob, didn't anybody tell them that's not how to raise your kids? Even when they made stupid choices, they were still the chosen ones, and God was beckoning them. Which, another way of saying it is, there is abundant life for our world, and it begins within each of us. When we take that seed of God to heart, listen more deeply, move beyond our dysfunction and the tangled mess into something more. Marching to Zion, listening. The Bible makes it clear it's not easy for us human beings to do this. We can't tolerate a whole lot of truth. And yet we have the capacity to listen, especially when we do it together. And so the question comes, can we listen into this sacred story and become part of it and see where it takes us and how it transforms the world? That's the question for the day, the question for our lives, the question for our world. Amen.